So should states be allowed to declare bankruptcy, void union contracts, bust the unions, you know, forget their pension obligations, things like that, lay off their workers, etc.? Is this the consequence of a significant change in our manufacturing base in this country? What's really going on here? Stephen Moore is with us, the senior economics writer, a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, co-author with Arthur Laffer of The End of Prosperity and the sequel Return to Prosperity, the website, the Wall Street Journal Online, WSJOnline.com, Twitter at WSJ. Stephen, I saw you at CPAC. It's great to have you back with us on the program.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Why should we say, okay, our manufacturing in the United States has gone from being roughly 30% of GDP, 33%, 32 or 33% of GDP, to about 11% of GDP, and it's now below the percentage of GDP that's government jobs. Therefore, we need to lay off government workers. I don't get it. Why don't we say, therefore, we need to get that manufacturing back with a protectionist trade policy?
Well, look, what I showed in my analysis in the journal a few weeks ago was that for the first time in American history, we have twice as many government employees as manufacturing employees.
Right.
We really have become a nation of people who are takers, not makers. And I think that's a real problem because we do need an industrial base, and not everybody can work as a school teacher and collect a government check. You need private sector workers to pay the taxes to support government workers. On this issue of whether states should declare bankruptcy, that's a tough one because, you know, the states, there's constitutional issues about whether states should be able to declare bankruptcy. And, you know, I'm not a legal constitutional scholar on this, but I will say this, that unless states start to get these pension and medical costs under control of their public employee unions, they're not going to have any money left over to provide good schools and good roads and so on. And that's for people on the left like you, Tom, you're going to have to decide, what's your top priority? Is it to provide, you know, lavish health care benefits that are twice as beneficial as what private sector worker gets? Or should that money be going to the public services we need to compete, like schools and roads and courthouses?
Okay, so there's basically kind of two issues on the table here. Let me address the latter first, the one that you just brought up. Scott Walker gave away as much in tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and corporations in Wisconsin as he took away from public service employees. Rick Snyder gave away more in tax breaks than he took away from public sector employees. I would say forget the tax breaks for the millionaires and billionaires. They're already doing better than they've done in the United States since 1928. And let's have, you know, reasonable services provided to people.
Well, I guess you haven't been to Michigan lately because Michigan is just...
Actually, I have. I grew up there.
All right. Well, so you know, you've seen in your lifetime what's happened to that state, how it's become so deindustrialized. And I think that the proposal that the governor there has put on the table is let's get jobs back. And yeah, I do believe that cutting taxes on businesses is a way to bring jobs back. I think Michigan has to become a right-to-work state as well. But look, there are certain building blocks to getting jobs back in Michigan.
So you're arguing that being a right-to-work for less state is the solution, that if our workers start competing in terms of wages and benefits with the workers in China and Malaysia and Indonesia and whatever, you know, let's drop the minimum wage to $1.50 an hour. Let's do away with worker safety protection laws. That's going to bring our jobs back?
But Tom, that's a total exaggeration. Look, right to work doesn't say you can't have a union, and there are unions in the southern states. It's just
very few.
What right to work says is you don't have to join a union, and that's a basic human right, I think, to be able to say, yes, I do want to contribute. I mean, don't you think that should be a right of every worker, whether they should be forced to join a union or not?
Stephen, you've raised a really, really good point, and I think it's a really important one. I believe in democracy, small d democracy, majority rule, and not absolute. You know, I realize we live in a representative, constitutionally limited democratic republic and all that, but I believe in democracy. And if the majority of workers in a company say, we want to be represented by a union, then I think, yes, even if I'm in a minority, that I should have to join that union, because what it's going to do is it's going to make that union actually functional and capable. So yes, I don't think that I should be able to opt out.
Look, I think
that's why I disagree with the right to work for less states.
I would say that's like saying if a majority of the people at this company want to say that no women or blacks should be able to work there, then they should have the right.
Well, that's why we have laws.
But that's the whole point, is we do have a laws that protect individual rights, and there's no reason that that union should be, you should have compulsory unionism that says that the government has the right to stick its hand in my pocket and take a share of my paycheck. I mean, that seems to me to be a fundamental individual right, just as that fact that a company shouldn't be able to discriminate against men or women. I mean, women or minorities or.
Well, apparently, Stephen, we're just going to defer on that. I mean, okay. You're not going to change my mind that workers should have the right to vote, to have a union, and everybody has to participate in it. I'm obviously not going to change your mind. Let's go back to the first issue that we talked about: the fact that manufacturing is now representing a third as much. It's 11% of our GDP. It used to be 33-34% of our GDP, and was for literally most of the history of the United States.
Yes.
Certainly since the Industrial Revolution. And this began to collapse under Reagan, but it really picked up speed during the Clinton administration with NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO. Why, Alexander Hamilton in 1791 proposed tariffs as a basis for protecting American industry and for creating American industry. These were put into place in large part by 1793 by the Washington administration and Congress. They stood until the 1980s. The average tariff in the United States, import tax, was 30%, more or less. They got as high as 40%, sometimes as low as 20%, sometimes never went below 20% during that entire period of time. Those tariffs paid 100% of the cost of the federal government from George Washington's administration to Abraham Lincoln's. Lincoln threw on an income tax. The tariffs paid 2/3 of the cost of government until World War I, and fully 1/3 of the cost of government until World War II, when government was 3 or 4 or 5 times the size it was in 1900 when Teddy Roosevelt was president. And now those tariffs that used to be 20% and 30% and used to cause manufacturers to say, I think I'll just make it here because I have to pay a tax when I import it from overseas. The average tariff in the United States is 2%. What's wrong with going back to the system that Alexander Hamilton and George Washington came up with that served this country so well until Ronald Reagan began to dismantle it?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a total fiction to say that the manufacturing of the United States started to dissolve under Reagan. In fact, I mean, maybe you're too young, Tom, but I 1970s. The era where the American industrial base disintegrated was during the 1970s. When we had high inflation and massive unemployment and factories. I mean, that's the song Allentown was written in 1980-81, right at the time when the U.S. economy was in a complete deindustrialization. The steel industry was almost entirely collapsed by the early 1980s. So yeah.
I'm not disputing that. Jimmy Carter drank some of that Kool-Aid the last 2 years of his administration.
Okay.
But the point is that free trade has destroyed us. We have 1 minute. It's all yours.
All right. The issue is, I think we could have a deal. Why don't we move to a national consumption tax, which would basically tax items when they're brought into the United States, not when they're taken out. There's something called the fair tax that would have a major impact on our ability to trade, which is to get rid of the income tax, tax people on the consumption. You will see so many jobs in this country and hard hat manufacturing.
But then if I make, if it costs me $100,000 a year to live and I make $500,000 a year, then I'm paying no tax on $400,000 of my income. I don't understand why that's good.
Because what you do is you're taxing when you buy like a car from Japan, you have to pay a sales tax on it. But when you make a car in the United States and sell it to Japan, there's no tax on it. So we right now our corporate income tax is like a tariff on our own goods. Tom, you should look at why we should get rid of the corporate tax. It's destroying jobs in America.
Okay, we will leave you with the final word, Stephen Moore.
Thank you. That's a first.
As much as I disagree, I just have to put that in there. WSJOnline.com, The End of Prosperity, The Return to Prosperity, his books. Stephen Moore. Stephen, thanks. Great talking with you again. Thanks for dropping by. Oh, Stephen is gone. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.